If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Everybody, this is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This is another Packers podcast. Bob, a little Smashing Pumpkins for you there.
The alt, we like it.
We do.
Pretty good, Dad.
We do. Thank you. Thank you.
Good call.
How's everything going?
Excellent on this cold Wednesday night. What is it, zero now?
0 degrees.
Going to -8, I think.
Exactly. It's frigid cold out there, folks. Be careful. And the roads, have they been slick for you? Been out driving much? How's it going there?
Well, we went down to chop down a Christmas tree today. It's out in the garage right now, but it was a bit cold out there.
Take me through the Bob McGinn, Pat McGinn Christmas tree hunt. Is it Griswold-esque? What are we talking about here?
It's pretty bad, yeah. So we went to a place where you can cut it down or, you know, you don't, or they have some cut. And a little chilly, so this year we kept our saw on the car and got one that had been cut. A big ball. So
it was pre-cut.
Yeah, I was sitting there.
Bob, are you losing your edge?
It's way out in the woods, though, this place. It's out in north of here.
How often do you cut? How often do you get the pre-cut? What's the ratio here?
Usually we go cut her down. They point us in the direction of the woods and go get it. But it was a little bit too cold for that, you know?
It was
pretty cold. Took the balsam. $25 for a balsam.
That's a good deal for a balsam.
All right, a big one,
That's
too.
That's a good balsam.
10-footer, yeah.
10-footer, okay. Mm-hmm. So you brought it in. You brought it. Now it's in the garage, though.
It is, yeah.
So you let it simmer. Let it chill. And then
get it up tomorrow, I think.
Tomorrow. All right, nice. Well, Bob, the Packers are still alive. They're half game out. Detroit, Chicago, still ahead of them here. Still a must-win situation. Week in, week out, they're going to need some help. Obviously, we're going to talk about the quarterback situation, which is in flux, hour to hour, interview to interview. I'm not sure when you're listening to this podcast, but hopefully that topic is still relevant by the time you are. It's a pretty wild situation right now, and we'll get into Matt Flynn, how he performed against Atlanta, what to expect if he's starting again. Bob wrote a column on John McMillan. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the return game, obviously the Dallas Cowboys, J.C. Tretter. All kinds of good stuff to get into, Bob. First things first, what did you see out of Atlanta? Did you see a team that was fighting that still should harbor hopes of getting into the playoffs and doing something this year?
Yeah. I mean, it was Atlanta's a lowly team, but they fought hard on defense the second half. Atlanta's got a lot of people on offense, and, you know, they pressed their advantage, which was with their pass rush against that kind of a bad Atlanta offensive line, and got some pressure on Ryan and won the game with Jarrett Bush as the hero. Jarrett Bush, huh? Nobody's ever worked harder around here. And those were two great plays, Tyler. Absolutely great plays, man.
Tell you what, pretty wild scene there in the locker room where he's the absolute last player to emerge for interviews. He has his cold tub routine. A.J. Hawk says he's crazy. He doesn't think that the guy sleeps. He says this is something like having your dog run on a treadmill. Just you got to do that to tire him out. You wrote that great story back in the summer on his ritual after practices and how he works out, he trains. Remember after one practice, he brought Jonathan Franklin out with him, and they were running the steps, the stairs at Lambeau Field. How many guys are wired like Jarrett Bush? So there he is in that moment, a player who has drawn the ire of fans for years. I mean, let's be real. I mean, he's the number one whipping boy for this fan base. Mano a mano, as you wrote, with Tony Gonzalez, maybe the best tight end in the game, and Jarrett Bush wins on fourth down, Bob.
Boy, didn't he? Sometimes when I bump into Jarrett in the locker room, remember he was like when he was injured, what, did he have an ankle problem for a couple weeks?
Right.
I think it was an ankle, right. Yeah. The guy was like a caged animal, wasn't he? I mean, he just wanted to do everything, and he couldn't. You know, I'm sure Pepper Burris and Pat McKenzie just had, you know, put a governor on the guy. So I say, Jarrett, you're losing your conditioning. You know, I'd be teasing. And even now when he's healthy, I'll say, Jarrett, you're putting on a few pounds there. You got to watch it.
Bob just getting on the nerve.
Yeah, he knows exactly where I'm coming from, you know. Yeah, nobody works harder than this guy. And the two plays, just incredible. Let's face it. He won the game with the first deflection. And then, boy, have you ever seen a guy go after a ball harder than Jarrett Bush on the pick?
Yeah, he wanted that.
He didn't care about shields or anything, man.
Isn't Jarrett Bush kind of emblematic of where the Green Bay Packers are in 2013? Without their quarterback, all the injuries. They need a guy like Jarrett Bush who literally maximizes every ounce of talent that he has in his body to be a contender. And that's what he did with the game on the line. So you have to hand it to him.
We've talked about that for 6 or 7 weeks, Tyler. This, you got to have guys, you know, what's the cliche? Step up, right?
Yeah.
And Corliss did it in this game, and Mike Neal had a sack, and Jarrett Bush, and, you know, Tremont Williams played great a couple games back. You have to have people, you know, elevate their games when the quarterback's not there. And in this case, they won a game by 1 point. Mm. But who cares, Tyler? They're 6-6-1, and they're half a game out because those Detroit Lions folded out in Philly, you know?
Boy, you called that with the Detroit Lions. I placed a little too much faith in them.
What, they have 7 fumbles and 9 penalties?
Yeah, it was a pretty wild game in the snow, but still. All right, so, Bob, I mean, the number one storyline here is obviously who's going to be quarterback for the Packers in Dallas. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you probably have the Cliff Notes, what's going on in Green Bay. Not medically cleared as of Wednesday. Practiced, did more stuff at practice. Andrew Corliss indicated that Aaron Rodgers did get some snaps with the first team. Matt Flynn said he's going to prepare as the starter and that when Aaron Rodgers is back, he's back, he gets it. But right now, Matt Flynn is in tunnel vision. He's preparing as the starter. He's honing in on areas of his game that he has to improve, and we can get into that later. But right now, I guess the question is, okay, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Flynn, whoever's the quarterback, can they go into Dallas and get a win?
Yeah, they're playing about the worst defense in the league. And if Flynn plays within himself and completes the ball 75% last week, they can score a bunch of points. They can score 24 to 30, if not more. That's a bad defense, terrible defense. So, yes, they can. Now, I'll mention this, Tyler. When I talked to a couple scouts Tuesday on the Cowboys, we talked about the matchup. And I think one guy had Dallas 31-24 with Flynn. And then I said, well, what if Rodgers plays? And he thinks he'll be rusty, won't be firing the ball over the lot. And he said, oh, I'll make it 31-28. And the other guy had it 28-10 for Dallas with Flynn and 28-17 with Rodgers. So that scout doesn't see Rodgers as all of a sudden coming in here and being a panacea for what ails this team, at least not in the first start or first game.
Good word there. What was that word he just used there, Bob?
Pancreas, wasn't it, or something?
Yeah. Wow. Nice. Nicely done. That's good stuff from the scouts, from the people who know, and that this is a winnable game, even if you're going in with Matt Flynn as your quarterback. Not a good defense. But with Rodgers right now, you have to think that there's a lot of risk assessment going on with that, cracking his collarbone, with the fractured collarbone, and that's got to be part of the decision-making process. At this point, it's going to be 6 weeks since the injury on Sunday, and as Tom Silverstein, he's been talking to these shoulder specialists a ton throughout this past month and a half, and they say for this kind of fracture, it takes 6 weeks of healing. So now you kind of get into that middle ground of, all right, well, you look at the scan, you weigh what you see, should he be cleared, should he not be cleared, you look at the team, the season, the playoff picture, all these factors suddenly come into play. Thought it was interesting, we had Tony Romo on the conference call today. Here's a guy who had a displaced collarbone. Different.
Worse.
Yeah. Charles Woodson, same deal last year where he didn't come back until the postseason.
But here's what Tony Romo had to say. He gave a lengthy response and really kind of broke it down here. Quarterback to quarterback, I think this is, you know, worth listening to. He said, quote, "It's very difficult. It really doesn't necessarily, obviously, the discomfort, and if you're feeling it at all, you can't come back and play. But even more so than that, even when you get relatively where you feel like it's pain-free, it still doesn't mean you're ready to play just because it's such an easy thing to hurt again. And it's a little different in the sense that if you come back right when you feel like you're healthy, there's just so many cases of people coming down with another collarbone injury, the same one, just re-injuring it. That really plays a big role in determining when you come back. And always an injury that you almost have to wait longer than initially diagnosed, typically because it's just a re-injury factor alone that plays such a high role." So a little rambling there, but I guess point being, it's an injury that you can hurt again, Bob. I mean, this is something that you can re-injure. Tony Romo know better than anybody. I mean, you get sacked, you take so many hits, you fall on that thing again. Granted, it's the off season from ahead, but it's still multiple months of rehab, and that's why they've been waiting a while to clear him. Which
I don't think the Cowboys are going to be hitting any quarterbacks very often. They got no rush. Pittsburgh could do some damage next week. The Bears really don't have much rush, do they? Well, they caused the injury, but they don't have much pass rush either, really.
Well, the other big factor of this is the pain threshold. And on his radio show, Aaron Rodgers said he felt pain last week. So I imagine after Wednesday's practice, he'll talk to the coaches and kind of assess all of that as well. But right now, it is pretty wild that it seemed on Wednesday anyways, gloom and doom's a little harsh, but it did not seem optimistic for Aaron Rodgers this week. And then you hear that he took these first team reps. Maybe that's just part of the natural progression. Maybe that was just the next step he was going to take regardless, but it's a step nonetheless. All right, Bob. So Matt Flynn, let's talk Matt Flynn. Let's say he's the Packers quarterback. That's the direction they have to go. I think the book on him is kind of clear right now, right? I mean, not a very powerful, strong arm. He's a gamer. He's got some moxie. He can move the ball. He can run the no huddle. If you're going to look at his two deficiencies, you're talking about lack of arm strength, taking too many sacks. The first, you probably can't fix in the middle of the season. The second, you can to an extent, and he talked a little bit about that today. Basically, Matt Flynn said that yes, he was a little hesitant at times in the pocket, not totally sure how his receivers were going to break out of routes, and obviously as a quarterback in this offense, he would take a sack over a potential interception. A few of those five sacks were on him. This, of course, the week after the Packers allowed seven sacks. A lot of those on the offensive line. But overall, here's what Matt Flynn kind of had to say about that decision-making process in the pocket.
I just got to get through my reads a little bit cleaner. I wasn't real sure about throws. Some of those sacks are just coming. I'm not 100% sure about the throws, what kind of leverage a DB has on the receiver. So I'm not going to make a throw that I think there's a chance it's going to get picked, or there's a chance that something bad could happen. So it's just a matter of making that, seeing it enough times to know, when it's a safe throw, when it's not a safe throw, and then it's not a safe throw, get to the next guy. So there's a couple times where I just kind of hung on and was trying to decipher where that DB was on the receiver.
Yeah, so I mean, I asked Matt Flynn that. A pretty honest response there. I think that's pretty evident in his play, and maybe that's an area with that comfort level where he would grow in his fourth game, third start back in Green Bay as the quarterback. You know, when you watched the film and you broke it down, I thought you really summed it up perfectly in your rating the Packers, that given the conditions, given the situations he was put in, it's about what you'd want out of Matt Flynn, right?
Yeah, he threw some pretty good balls, seven or eight good balls. I thought he even drove one off to the right side about 15 yards to James Jones, I think it was. Whoa. The sideline catch by Corliss, that was dangerous as heck, wasn't it?
Right.
That probably should have been picked. I'm amazed that Flynn was able to fit that thing in there because there was nowhere to go with the ball. That was a risky throw. I don't know. He's okay. Is he better than Tolzien?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I really don't. But they are able to run the no huddle, the hurry up, with Matt Flynn, and they did that in the first half, and he was able to get into a little bit of a rhythm, which was a step. But you can see that balance, or the challenge of balancing risk And, you know, being safe with the football. I mean, we were looking at a few throws before we started taping here where we kind of differed. When I initially saw the one sack deep in Atlanta territory, I believe it was Massaqua, one of his sacks. And watching live and watching James Jones in that situation coming off his slant, it looked to me like Jones was open, like there was a window available. But, man, Massaqua beat Barkley with an inside move, and Flynn just didn't have enough time where I guess maybe if it's Aaron Rodgers, he finds a way to gun that ball in there and get it to James Jones. But those are the kind of throws where Matt Flynn's got to decide on the fly, decipher the coverage, risk assessment, and snap of a finger.
He just doesn't have Rodgers' release, right? That whip-it release that is, yeah, on that one right there, Tyler, maybe Rodgers throws that ball, huh?
He might. Yeah. It looks like the safety kind of comes up and creates a window, but it's still there at the same time.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, interesting opinion there that we kind of differed on. And then there's another play where he could have had James Jones on a stop route, didn't see him, was looking elsewhere. So it's a process. I mean, and with any backup quarterback, it's not going to be smooth. And even against Dallas, I imagine they just want him to move the ball up points on the board. Speaking of Dallas, you got that depth chart right in front of you, Bob. Get it started.
Well, let's look at the defense, right? So Jerry Jones fired Rob Ryan after the season. He'd had a 3-4 for almost 10 years. And he hires Monty Kiffin, the master of the Tampa 2, cover 2. And Monty's 73 years old, and it's been a complete debacle.
He's only 73.
He didn't have, and I'm against that age discrimination stuff, so it's nothing to do with the age, you know. It's just his system right now. The cover two people are really struggling. You look at Minnesota, you look at Jacksonville, and their defense is way down. The Bears' defense is down. Okay, so Kiffin can't stop the run, so he can't just hold his two safeties back like he'd like to, and which he did in Tampa Bay all those years.
And
so
Tampa two.
Yeah, right. So he has to bring a guy down, and then they're just not holding up outside, as you saw Monday night against the Bears. And you couple that with no pass rush and a decimated defensive line, and they're just bad. So let's look at their personnel. You know, they have two pass rushers. DeMarcus Ware, he made the conversion from a 3-4 to a 4-3, and now he doesn't look very good. He's kind of hitting the wall at age 31. One scout said he'll never be a Pro Bowler again, and he's made 7 straight Pro Bowls. I think almost all as a starter, but it's just not happening, Tyler. He'll play over both tackles, mostly over Bakhtiari, but Barkley, you'll see him too. They lost Anthony Spencer early with a knee, I think it was. So they're starting George Selvey. He's with his 4th or 5th team, just a tryhard, 7th-round pick. He's giving them all they can. It's just not good enough. You know, for a third end to supplant these guys, they picked up Martez Wilson about 3 weeks ago. He drafted by New Orleans, 3rd-round pick, played there for 2.5 years. He had some good rushes. I mean, this guy's an explosive 4.46 athlete. And then he gets cut in October. Chargers took him, had him for 2 or 3 weeks. They cut him, and as desperate as Dallas is, they pick him up, and he plays 20 snaps the other night in Chicago. It's just a grab bag. All right, inside you got Nick Hayden, a former Badger. He's the nose. He sat out all of last year. He's like 5th year in the league. He used to be in Carolina. Cowboys signed him in January. He makes the team, and now he's starting. Jay Ratliff has a blow up with Jerry Jones. He's gone, so Hayden's starting. They got a good 3 technique, Jason Hatcher. He's got 9 sacks, which is extreme high amount for a DT. He's a good pass rusher. The guards and Dietrich Smith have to really be aware of this guy. He's not a complete guy against the run, but he's a good pass rusher. And backups. 4 guys, again, off the street. They're Crawford and Bass, who would have been probably 5th and 6th in the rotation, out for the year in August. Jarius Wynn, the former Packer. The guys from the Colts, Corey Irvin. These are just all just bodies thrown in there.
What's
it's a mess.
Jags.
The Jaguars.
Just a guy, remember?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, just a guy. When you're taking those shorthand, J-A-G, right? All right, the linebackers, Sean Lee's a great player, right, Tyler? He's a great player.
He's the one stud they have up back there,
completely.
Right?
I mean, he's lost weight. He's 235 or 34. But the guy gets everywhere. He sees things before things happen. He's a little bit like Chris Spielman with his ability to diagnose. He had a stinger, but the word is he should be okay. Bruce Carter, kind of a tremendous athlete, a second-round pick in 2012. He got hurt the other night. Looks like he's not going to play. Okay, so they're probably going to start Ernie Sims, the former Lion, for Carter. And on the strong side, you got Kyle Wilbur. He was drafted to play in the 3-4. He's really not a 4-3 stand-up guy, but he's probably going to have to play again another week. You got one good linebacker. The secondary. They don't fit this Tampa 2, Tyler. You got lean finesse corners in Brandon Carr, Orlando Scandrick, and Morris Claiborne, the high pick in 2012. Claiborne probably won't play with a hammy. Scandrick's a really good player coming off a really bad game. Carr, the former Chief, he was turning down hits in Chicago. I couldn't believe it. Do you blame it on the cold? I wouldn't if I was a Cowboy coach. It was pathetic. It was turned down city like half a dozen times.
No,
I couldn't believe the tape. Just didn't even want to play. I mean, it was just amazing. An NFL guy making $50 million or whatever it is, and he just wouldn't tackle. He wanted other people to do it. It was bad.
Was this a problem for him in the past at all? I mean, he seemed like an aggressive guy over the years.
How can you cave into the cold? I mean, these are pro athletes. I just have no tolerance for this.
Speaking of the cold, I mean, it is worth mentioning that 0 degrees in Lambeau Field, it was frigid. I mean, when we stepped out on the mezzanine to walk toward the locker room, I mean, it was cold, and it was really hard to tell with Packers' quality of play overall in terms of tackling. I think Dom Capers said they had 2 missed tackles as a team. I think that says a lot after just an awful tackling game at Detroit the week prior. So you didn't see that out of your guy, Brandon Carr.
No. The safeties, Barry Church is a pretty good, strong safety, undrafted. He played by he's around the box a lot. He made almost every tackle against the Bears. Good player. And then the other safety, Jeff Heath, a rookie free agent from Saginaw Valley State, the Division II, the GLIAC. They're playing the Michigan Tech Huskies and the NMU Wildcats. Heath is he's got a future, but right now he's not really ready to play. But because they're so hard up, he's playing. That's the D of Monty Kiffin.
J.J. Wilcox, good guy at the combine. Friendly, former running back, Georgia Southern, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Friendly guy to talk to. I think he said he studied Charles Woodson on film a little bit, making the position switch from offense to defense. But second round for him this year, probably a little bit of a reach.
Was it second round?
I think so. I could be wrong. I think he was a second round pick.
I'm not sure. But, yeah, he got hurt. He was starting. He got hurt. Now he's healthy, but Heath has got the job.
All right, well, so let's flip to the other side of the ball with their first-round pick, Travis Frederick. That pick caught a lot of criticism, a guy from Wisconsin. He's kind of worked out for him, I guess.
It has. He's been a day-one starter, and he's been fine. He's not real quick of foot or anything. In fact, he's slow, but he does everything else good. He's been a good player. You watch tape of the guy. I mean, he's solid. He's decisive. He's not great to the second level, but he's a pretty good player.
Did you think that he would be a good player at this level? I remember you wrote about him before the draft. Pretty historically slow times at the combine.
It was. I went back and I reviewed that story this week, yeah. Tyler. You know one thing. He's 6'3.5", and his predecessor, Peter Kahns, he's 6'5". And I think most people sort of thought Kahns definitely was the better athlete and would be the better pro, but it hasn't worked out at all. Maybe that extra inch and a half at center. You see Kahns just getting pushed back as a guard now. You saw it in the Green Bay game. Yeah. They were abusing him, and maybe those interior guys should be 6'4 or under, not 6'5".
I guess you really do have to study the tape as far as strength goes with Wisconsin linemen, because they don't, in their strength and conditioning program, they don't really do a ton of bench pressing, right? I mean, heavy lifting, because all the rep counts are pretty low, it seems, year after year with these guys. True. So how do you kind of gauge who's strong and who's not strong enough for the NFL?
It must be tough for these scouts to do that. You're right. I don't really know that, yeah. The rest of the offensive line, they got an outstanding left tackle, Tyron Smith. The right tackle, Doug Freeze from Manitowoc, 30 miles from Green Bay. Manitowoc ships. I mean, it's amazing he's gone this far from the Fox, when he played the Fox River Valley Conference. Free took a big pay cut. He's a 5-year starter. He's playing fine. Okay.
How do you pronounce Manitowoc? Manitowoc?
Manitowoc.
Manitowoc.
Yeah.
Okay, I've always kind of said it in one fell swoop, Manitowoc.
How about the nickname? Shipbuilders.
The shipbuilders, not the ship.
Most people refer to them now as ships. They shorten it. But the shipbuilders, one word.
Shipbuilders. Is that right?
How about that, huh?
Is that right? And what were you guys up in Escanaba? The Crusaders.
Holy name Crusaders.
That's right.
What was your nickname?
We were the Eagles. Kind of lame. Everybody's the Eagles.
Crusaders, not very good either. We got an original fight song.
You had a fight song in high school.
Original.
We didn't have any fight songs.
Of course you did. You don't pay attention to it.
Fight songs are overrated.
I love my fight songs.
That's because you went to Michigan. They have a good fight song there.
All right. The guards, Ronald Leary, 331. Below average. And McKenzie.
Jack.
Yeah. A little better than that. McKenzie Bernadou, a former Panther. He's all right. They got a pretty good line. I mean, a year ago at this time, it was just a haphazard mess. But they've solidified the thing now. Frederick really was a good pick. Man, you get a starting center for 10 years, that's a heck of a pick. Back off on Frederick. All right, the wide receivers. How do you see Dez Bryant, Tyler? You've seen Dez this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they use Dez Bryant. I believe it was the Giants game. They moved him inside a little bit to get him the ball from the slot. He's better outside, but do they try to move him around a little bit on Green Bay's defense? Because right now the Packers have had Micah Hyde in the slot, Jared Bush. They'd like to have Tremont Williams work on the outside, but if you start moving Dez Bryant inside, do you really want Micah Hyde covering him? I imagine he'd do a better job learning from whatever he did against Victor Cruz, but that's a tough task for a rookie.
I wonder if Shields will match on Bryant.
That's another option.
It's possible.
That's an option.
On the other side, Miles Austin has really hit the wall kind of like Ware. He's just not a factor. Romo doesn't even really go to the guy. Their number three is Terrence Williams, a big straight-line fast rookie from Baylor. He's all right. And your four is Cole Beasley, a little 5'8", mini Danny Amendola kind of a guy. Don't say Wes Welker. He's not anywhere near that. But Beasley's not bad. And then we got Jason Witten. Witten doesn't offer much after the catch anymore, but he's got great hands. You know, he flexes all the time, and Romo goes to him. He's a good tight end.
And how many times have we seen Dallas's offense, after a bad game, after a bad loss, bounce back in a big way? I mean, they have some explosive weapons on that side of the ball. So,
All right, so at quarterback, Tyler, let's go to Tony Romo, right? The Burlington native, he's a heck of a golfer. He's done a lot of tremendous things in the summer on the Wisconsin Publinks Tour and various events down in southeast Wisconsin. 37 on the Wunderlich for Tony Romo coming out of Eastern Illinois. Aaron Rodgers had 35. Not many have beaten Aaron Rodgers, but Romo edged him there.
Wow.
Romo's a good player, isn't he? I mean, he really is a good player. He's improved a lot. Tremendous story on him in Sports Illustrated last week.
Agreed.
Yeah, it was a great piece. The guy's really committed and kind of misunderstood. And I guess when you're in Dallas and all this, you take a tremendous amount of heat. And some of it just isn't there. Some of it is. Some people say he can't read defenses, you know. Even at this point in his 10th year, he's not a quick reader. It's led to a lot of picks. And DeMarco Murray is finally healthy. Now, it may not last. He's, you know, dating back to early in his Oklahoma career. He's always hurt, and he'll be hurt again soon. And the Packers' best chance here is to somehow knock him out of this game with gang tackling, hard hitting. They got to be physical. Murray can really do it all, Tyler. He's a flowing runner, a little bit like Eric Dickerson. He runs pretty tough for a big 6'2", 220 guy.
Or does he, though? I mean, sometimes I watch him play and just like, well, man, why doesn't this guy get north and south all the time? What?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But again, he's
a great back, but you just kind of leaves you wanting just a little bit more.
And there were knocks about that in Oklahoma. But now, from what I heard yesterday, I don't see that. These people were pretty sold on his courage. So he's fast. He can turn the corner. He's got great hands. He's a threat.
Different kind of running back from Steven Jackson that they saw and were preparing for last week.
Right. Not as good as LeSean McCoy, but really, in his own right, he's a top 12 back, top 10.
Yeah.
On talent, he might be top 8, you know. There's no real backup. Interesting, you know. I mean, just the Cowboys kind of throw stuff all around. They never had a fullback. They had no interest in a fullback till last week. And they signed a former Bear, Tyler Klutz. And all of a sudden, Bill Callahan and Jason Garrett put him in the lineup. And he was a lead blocker, like 20 plays Monday night against Chicago. He did well. It's just, you know, this grab-bagging sort of, it's something the Packers really don't do.
Yeah.
I mean, they have their philosophy and McCarthy. And whatever goes on in Dallas, they...
I mean, yeah, they released Jerron McMillan. It's like, what the hell's going on around here?
Doesn't happen much, stuff like that, does it?
Yeah, it really doesn't.
Special teams in Dallas, outstanding. Dan Bailey might be the best player on their 53. He's 90% in 3 years. He's really good. The punter's okay, Chris Jones. The return guy might be the best in the league. Dwayne Harris, he does them both. He does a great job. He's got a hamstring, didn't practice today. That could be a huge thing in terms of tilting field position. So the Packers certainly would hope he doesn't play. And they cover well, too. Rich Bisaccia, he was in the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay 10 years ago. He's the coordinator, first year under Garrett. So that's the Cowboys. They're 7-6.
Great breakdown, Bob, as always. Well, you ended there with special teams, and if Harris can go, that'd be an enormous edge, you would think. In terms of the return game, Dallas and Green Bay, where, I mean, we can talk about Randall Cobb all we want on offense, but they've really missed that dynamic return ability and the return game outside of really that one punt return from Micah Hyde at Minnesota. What have they gotten out of the return game, and are there really any other options right now?
No, they have nothing on their roster, so it's Micah Hyde. You know, Hyde probably had his best game returning kickoffs the other day.
Mm-hmm.
He's been solid on punts, no question there.
And a guy who won't fumble, who won't give you that costly mistake, there's something to be said for that.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You know, they didn't want to use Randall Cobb doing this stuff this year, right?
Right.
So their eggs were in the basket of Jeremy Ross. And I don't know. You know, I just don't know. I mean, he had a fumble in San Francisco, but he returned the ball really well last year, other than the San Francisco game. It was impressive, all the tackle-breaking stuff. This year, you know, he did not look good against Washington. He was hesitant for some reason. This guy's a strong guy with a great lower body, and he didn't bring it. He had a very, very tough situation in Cincinnati on that fumble. Now, that ball hit that wind in the corner we were on in that press box. That was a tough one, Tyler. Mm-hmm. The ball was not hit well. It's going towards the city of Cincinnati, and that's where the wind enters that stadium. I've talked to people about this,
wow.
And the wind knocked that ball down. That's a tough call. That's a real tough play, and the Packers bagged him after it the next day.
Wasn't the sun in his eyes as well on that play?
Checked on that, no.
Okay.
That is not a sun factor at noon game at that time of day. So if you remember Jonathan Franklin, that was his greatest, finest hour this season.
Right.
So they've cut Ross on Monday, figuring they got Franklin to plug in. But Franklin had never done this stuff in UCLA, and he turned into a bust. He was far worse than, well, he just wasn't any good doing it. All right, so they tried Cobb a little bit, and then they had no option by like week 7, and it was all Micah Hyde show. All right, so Ross was their best chance to really be good at this thing, to have a guy like Dwayne Harris, to have a real solid returner. And they cut him loose. And so Harris went to Ross went to Detroit, and he burned the Packers on Thanksgiving from scrimmage and on punt, and then he had 2 touchdowns in the snow against the Eagles. I don't really know what to say. I mean, is Jeremy Ross a better wide receiver than Chris Harper and Miles White? He's right with him.
I think you could make that case, and we saw him through the summer and even before that OTAs and minicamp where you could see Mike McCarthy kind of experimenting with him in that creative role offensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had plans for this guy offensively and on special teams. You know, he could have served multiple roles on this team. It didn't work out. You know, who's to say if he would have figured it out in Green Bay, though, too? I think sometimes a change of scenery for a player just works. Something clicks, and something obviously has for Jeremy Ross. I just have a tough time, criticizing the Packers in this case when they do, you know, stick with players through and through so many different times. Like you're not gonna bat 100% on these things. And for whatever reason, Jeremy Ross, something clicked in Detroit, and he's kind of sticking it to Green Bay, whether he says he is or not.
Yeah, I'll just mention this: Desmond Bishop. Last year, when he was doing his recovery from what he had a torn quad last year, I can't even remember. Mm-hmm. He had so many injuries, but we're talking one day in the locker room in November, and he said when he was a senior in 06, Jeremy Ross was a scout team freshman at Cal, and he was a running back. And Bishop said this to me, and I said, what? He said, Bob, he's one of the two or three best running backs I have ever tried to tackle in my life.
Wow.
This is a 5 or 6 year NFL veteran. I said, what? He says, yeah, that's how strong he was and how he used to bring it at our number one defense at Cal. Wow. Now, he later went to wide receiver, but the guy has running skill and running toughness, Tyler. I said, do the Packers know this? He says, oh, yeah. He says, I've told them.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
I'll never forget that thing. Desmond Bishop, as you know, he's not a BS or Tyler.
No, he's not.
This is a bright, bright man.
He's a straight shooter.
Yes, he is. So he's gone.
He's gone, and the Packers are kind of in survival mode there.
Yep. All right, so Tyler, on offense, the Packers, they're really going to – they need some ball control. That would certainly help their defense. And Eddie Lacy would be the man to provide that. But he's kind of nicked up this week, right?
Right, yep. He's rehabbing that sprained ankle. Rehabbed it Wednesday, going to do that again on Thursday. Mike McCarthy hopes he can practice some on Friday, and you know, wrote about this last week. I mean, here's a running back who 8 out of the last 10 games has carried the ball 20 times or more. And we're not just talking about pitch outs and in space. We're talking about a large 235, maybe 240-pound man blasting into a pile of bodies, carry after carry after carry after carry. There's not a lot of backs built like Eddie Lacy, so I just tried to reach out to some of the better big backs in the game in recent years, Jerome Bettis being one, the Bus, obviously, and Jamal Anderson, who didn't last too long. He had the two knee injuries and then retired after that, but you know, in 1998, he had one of the best years ever for a bigger back. And I think maybe the best takeaway from that story that I got anyways talking to those guys was Jerome Bettis said that his rookie year in Los Angeles Rams, that he took a pounding, he took a beating, he ran hell-bent for election every carry like it was his last, which is what coaches want out of their players, but he realized he can't do that. Bruce Sternum, shoulder issue, I mean, all kinds of injuries going on. So he kind of changed his approach where he would run full speed ahead, full contact, physical, finishing runs on the boundary early in games. And then said towards the end of the game when DBs were kind of bracing for those big hits, maybe diving low at his ankles to take him out, that's when he used the elusiveness. Remember, Jerome Bettis had some footwork to him.
Yeah, he sure did.
Anyways, back to Eddie Lacy. That's something he's probably going to have to figure out, is how to use some of his other attributes to last in this league. He's been a model of durability up to Sunday here with this ankle injury, which may or may not hinder him at Dallas. And I mean, the offense has been running through Eddie Lacy, Bob.
Yeah.
So we have to talk about that decision. Hindsight is 20/20. Can do this with a lot of different things with this team, but the Packers have the ball. This is after the pick six against Atlanta in their own end, in their own territory. They throw twice, I believe. Mm-hmm. They're going to score.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decide on the last play to give the ball to Eddie Lacy on the ground, bounces it outside, turns the ankle. The half is over. Fans are booing for many reasons, and the second guessing begins, Bob.
So the ball is on the 32 with 15 seconds left. So they throw a screen to Lacy. You know, they're going to try to gain 18, 20 yards on a successful screen. Gets it up to midfield. Then they got maybe six seconds left. Throwing out, bring Crosby in, right? The screen was incomplete. Then he threw it incomplete again. And now there's 4 seconds left, I believe. And McCarthy handed it to Lacy on an inside zone. Poorly blocked, Lang and Dietrich Smith. Lacy doesn't go down. He bounces left and gets snowed under and hurts the ankle, right? So, I mean, I've had some emails. What's McCarthy doing? You know, why isn't he taking a knee? That's ridiculous. You play the game. McCarthy knew the fans were upset. You can feel a vibe out there. I'm sure he can. And he probably figured there was going to be some boos. You know, those boos become a lot more intense and a lot more widespread if you go and take a knee on third down like that, and then, you know, take it into the locker room, running off. You play. You don't just. That's a terrible signal to send to your team, your assistant coaches, the opponent. You know, you play the game. Somebody gets hurt, so what? It's just that's the price of admission in the NFL. Boy, I certainly wouldn't question him on that. How do you see it?
Well, do you play to the crowd like that, Bob? Do you care about the boos if you're a coach?
Well, I think it can. I don't want to do anything to increase those boos. I mean, that can be a real bad situation, and I don't think if I'm the coach, I don't want those fans going nuts on my team. I want to do whatever I can to maybe reduce that. I think that's important.
We'll see. You know, on the surface, it doesn't look good when you throw twice and then you run. Overall, I'm with you, though, that it's – I mean, Mike McCarthy isn't planning on an injury happening in that situation. I mean, he doesn't think Daddy Lacy's going to get hurt on a carry. I mean, he has 227 carries this year. He's had a concussion on one of them, an ankle injury on one. He's been pretty durable on the other 225. So, but yeah, I mean, it is interesting debate. I mean, I've heard it here too, Twitter, email, chats. Fans aren't happy with the decision, and we're going to see if it's going to cost him here. But
you don't want to, you cannot live in fear. You don't want to show signs of weakness in this NFL, and that's a sign of weakness. That's running up the red flag. It's just pathetic football if you worry about stuff like that.
Well said. Well said. All right, well, okay, speaking of boos, a lot of the players were surprised with the boos. Ryan Taylor told me in the locker room that he didn't expect that. He said that, like, I have to tell you, that the boos surprised me.
Yeah.
A few of the other players said the same thing in so many words. It was a different vibe at Lambeau Field, and I've only been out here 3 years covering the team, but I've never really seen anything like that.
That's interesting, you know. I mean, I just remember the days when, you know, it was rampant in Milwaukee, more in Milwaukee probably in those three home games, but certainly a lot in Green Bay too over those 70s and 80s. Spoke with T.J. Lang about this afterwards, and he just said, it was the best crowd he had seen all year. And this was the seventh home game, right? That they really were behind him. And in the fourth quarter, they really made a difference on these third downs. And he said, you know, the crowds here kind of hit or miss. I know the Packers, you know, erected this big south end, and they were dealing about the so-called, you know, bang the gong and the bell, wall of noise or whatever it was.
You're very personally a big fan of the first down calls, aren't you? I always love looking over you in the press box on those.
It's pretty amateurish and sophomoric, isn't it, Tyler?
And
there's another Packers.
But we both like the guy who does the call.
Bill Jones is a great person.
He's one of the best in the business. Probably the best news anchor we have in town, right?
Tyler, it's not his idea, okay?
Do you think Bill Jones could step up and say, hey, I'm not doing this first down chain anymore?
No.
Give this to the Packers, though, Bob. G-Force is no more.
Where is the right? G-Force?
I hope it suffered a slow and painful death. That the G-Force is gone. It's, you want to talk about moronic. The G-Force, Bob?
Yeah, that was brutal. I like Packy Packer in the 80s.
All right, so what would be a good gimmick for the Packers to go with here? What could they do, Bob? Got any ideas for the...
Anything, and that's another Packer. Anything but that.
How about cheerleaders?
I wouldn't allow that at my high school.
Cheerleaders? Oh, you're talking about the first down.
The first down.
Okay. Yeah. I say we find some cheerleaders. Scantily
clad. Professional crew?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. All right. Any final thoughts on the fans?
They helped the team. They got loud for the first time this year, according to TJ Lang.
Then there have been times where maybe the vibe hasn't quite been there. This way.
I mean, it's kind of a crowd that, I mean, they're used to winning. They're used to winning big for 20 years around here, you know, and so it's kind of a docile crowd. It's a little tiny, well, I'm not going to go to my alma mater. We won't discuss that right now in relation, but it's a little bit like Michigan's crowds. Hmm. They changed over the years. They just started winning, and got older. I think a lot of people come from out of town to this. You know, this is one on the bucket list, right? Come to Lambeau Field, you know, kiss the ground and do all this kind of stuff. And they're not into the game. They don't make any noise. And I think the real rabid people, a lot of them have been priced out of Lambeau Field.
That's interesting, Bob.
You know, just the blue-collar guy from rural Wisconsin, they're priced out of it.
Yeah.
And these, a lot of people are dumping their tickets on scalpers, and scalpers are getting big bucks, not Atlanta, but other games. And
kind of a StubHub type of fan base where...
And it's not the the rock rib fan who will go out there and just really yell and scream.
I mean, this,
more to
this,
be seen.
This isn't
there.
A trend that will reverse. I mean, the prices are going to
no,
keep going up.
No, I wouldn't
up.
Think so. Absolutely not. Well, the prices really go down if they become a losing team, but wouldn't anticipate that happening.
All right, well, we don't have a lot of time here, Bob, so let's get into some questions. But before we do that, the Super Bowl book will make a fine Christmas gift for anybody out there.
The Ultimate Super Bowl Book, second edition. Pat, my wife, and crack marketing director, we're ready for quick mail order turnarounds. So you send me an email at beamagain@jrn.com, and we'll turn this thing around and get it to you for those holiday gift giving. I'll personalize it any way your heart's desire.
A nice note from Bob. Any special notes you've written over these past few years?
Oh, many, Tyler, many. Many things about Packer fans, and yeah, just a great, great bunch of people. It's fun doing them.
Awesome. Well, it's a great book. Highly recommend it to everybody
Thanks,
out there.
Thanks, Tyler.
Okay, let's get into these questions, Bob. First one, let's get into our buddy Aaron Nagler on Twitter, on the Twitter sphere.
Nagler!
Yes, our buddy there. Good question here. Mount Rushmore Packers quarterbacks. He says, Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Lynn Dickey. Bob, yes or no?
No, we need Cecil Isbell and Arnie Herber ahead of Dickey.
Whoa! Okay.
Certainly Arnie Herber.
Why is that?
God, he was a tremendous passer in the late 20s, early 30s.
The late 20s, early 30s, Bob. What are we? Are they wearing knee pads? And what is football in 1922?
He played later than that. Forward pass was certainly a part of the game, Ty.
I don't think
he's a good football player.
Put him ahead of Lynn Dickey.
Arnie Herber.
That's a modern era of football. It's
Green Bay West Wildcat.
I don't know. I'm with you, Aaron. I'm with you on those four. All right. John, he asks, our buddy John, he's a Twitter regular. Two questions. One, your vote for Packers MVP at this moment. Two, and I like this one, Bob, favorite Christmas movie for each of you.
Packers MVP. Jarrett Bush.
You're going with Bush.
I think so. I'm going with Bush.
Bob's going with Jarrett Bush.
We're riding Jarrett.
Boy, that's a difficult one. I'm going to say, well, Aaron Rodgers, if you're going most valuable, because you see how valuable he is when he's not on the team. But for guys who are on the team, this offense has really run through Eddie Lacy. So I'm going to go with Eddie Lacy. Favorite Christmas movie, Bob?
It's a Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart? Got to. How about yours?
You know, I've never seen that one,
well,
Bob.
Yeah?
Sacrilege, but yeah, I have
okay.
not seen it.
All right.
I mean, you got to go Christmas Vacation. Come on. It's not close. The Griswold Family.
Oh, yeah. All right. I guess I've seen it.
You got to go with it. So many unbelievable one-liners. It's Christmas Vacation. All right. Jeff Nelson. Jeff asks, would Ted Thompson consider signing Matt Flynn to a long-term contract to be the backup quarterback?
If he goes 3-0 and then wins a playoff game, Jeff, by all means. Ty, what do you say to Jeff?
I think they got some plans for Scott Tolzien still. I think that they'd like to work with Tolzien a little bit more.
Okay.
But we'll see. Handsome Pete asks, it's getting toward evaluation time. Should we be seeing more Brandon Bostic and less Andrew Corliss?
No, we need more Jake Stoneburner.
You know, surprised that Stoneburner didn't see the field a little bit more, but I think part of it had to be the Corliss and Bostic, mainly Corliss. Playing pretty well in this past game. Jerry Fondo, when we talked to him during the week,
yeah,
he says we have to see more out of Corliss, and he has a career game.
Time for Jake.
Green Banana asks, with this roster, how would you protect the soft underbelly of this defense? He says that Sean Richardson is better than MD Jennings.
Let's see some more of Sean Richardson before we start saying that.
I agree.
Green Banana.
you know, Richardson, he's a bigger guy. They obviously put him in there to help against the run. But when you watch him on film, too, there were a couple plays where he was blocked. I mean, he had the nice tackle on Rodgers, even though Rodgers got the first down. I don't really know what to make of him quite yet. I think it's either. Too soon. I mean, MD Jennings has kind of been made a scapegoat by a lot of people and said a handful of bad plays, but I don't know that Richardson is better right now.
MD Jennings tackles a lot better than Morgan Burnett this year.
Absolutely.
In number of misses. I mean, he had the blatant one here, and it cost him maybe his job, but Morgan's missed probably three times as many.
Agreed. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. We have to sign off now. Until next time, Bob, no Skrillex today. Sorry, I didn't play any Skrillex for you. We listened to it a little bit before we went on,
yeah.
And you gave me the Bob McGinn look. You gave me that look. You didn't like it.
And then we adjusted to the Smashing Pumpkins, which is a smashing choice. Thanks for listening, everyone.
're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.